want to welcome everybody to another edition of Rubbin' Is Racing. I am your host, Mr. CJ Sports. My co-host with me, as always, Mr. Steve Big Sweat Billmeyer. How you doing tonight, Steve?
Oh, I'm doing great. Feeling good about yesterday's Bristol race. And I want to talk about it. There's so much going on, it's going to be hard to cover it all in an hour.
Oh, Bristol, baby, the last Coliseum. I tell you what, that was Bristol's one of those tracks, more specifically the Saturday night race. I know not every NASCAR fan is a fan of Saturday night racing, but I'm sorry. But Underneath the Lights at Bristol is by far one of my favorite tracks that was on my bucket list. To be honest with you, it ran neck to neck with being at the Daytona 500. There's just something about being at Bristol. Of course, Sunday's race was a daytime race. Nonetheless, we got to see the same action. We got to see the same tempers. And we got to see, unfortunately, I don't have any problem with Joe Gibbs Racing. But we seen the same results, I guess, we were expecting to see. And another weekend of dominance out of Joe Gibbs Racing. Like we talked about before the show, the only thing bad about a season like this, as great as it's been, is it's turned into the Joe Gibbs Racing season. Like, it don't matter what you put them in, they managed to find their way up front, and they've definitely found something over Joe Gibbs Racing. It don't matter if it's the trucks, the Xfinity Series, or the Sprint Cup Series, they are right now the class of the entire NASCAR program. Have you seen, other than maybe when Hendrick was a kind of head of the game with the COT, have you seen any other team be as dominant as we have seen with Joe Gibbs Racing? I mean, it's kind of been ever since last year when we went to that new downforce program we started in Kentucky. Got to be about that time frame that it really took off for Joe Gibbs Racing. And it just seems that there's been no looking back for almost a year at this point.
Yeah, there hadn't been domination like this since Petty Enterprises in the 60s. I mean, Joe Gibbs Racing is the face of NASCAR right now because of their overall performance of all four teams in any of the races, super speedways, mile and a half, short tracks, it matter. They're just putting out a good project. If you remember, a couple of years ago, they changed some of the aero package then, and Joe Gibbs Racing was kind of the last ones to pick up on it and make the changes. You know, Chad Knauf and Hendrick Motorsports picked up on it right away and started winning a couple of races, and it just seemed like Joe Gibbs Racing was slow catching on and everything, and I think that memory stuck with them. And when they announced that low downforce package, they immediately jumped on it, worked on it, found something that works, and the proof is in the pudding now.
Oh, yes. Most definitely. Like I said, I'm a Joe Gibbs racing fan. I was never a big Kenseth fan. I've always liked Cousin Carl. I'm a big Kyle Busch fan. Hamlin's never, rubbed me wrong. I'm not going to say I'm going to go out and, buy any of his merchandise, but I've never really had a problem with, any of the drivers over there. And as a matter of fact, the whole Kenseth Joey Logano thing last year actually has me pulling for Kenseth a little bit more. Just because, I don't know, I like a little controversy in my life. There's got to be a little drama somewhere.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, repetitiveness and dominance is not good in every sport. And, I'm a guy that's, when it comes more specifically to NASCAR, I can't watch the same people win all the time. I can't watch the same team. I used to be a Gordon fan, it got old. I used to be a Johnson fan, it got old. Now I picked Kyle Busch before he started dominating, and I'm a Danica fan, so I get the best of both worlds right now. It's not like the NCAA where there's 150 or 60 football games on a Saturday. It's not like the NFL where there's 16 games. There's only one race. And I do like my variety when it comes to races. And so as much as I'm enjoying it, I would like some of these other teams to finally catch up so we can see a little bit of variety up there. And I think Hendrick Motorsports right now is probably, your next best bet with Dale Jr. with another second-place finish. Chase Elliott, another, top five. I believe he got fifth or sixth last week or the last race, so It seems that Hendrick might be slowly moving into that direction. Of course, we can never count out Stuart Haas, two cars in the top 10 once again. But right now, who would you label as Joe Gibbs Racing's biggest obstacle on defending their championship for 2016?
That's kind of hard to say because I don't think there's any obstacle to them other than themselves for winning the championship. I haven't seen Hendrick or anybody else be as dominant as Joe Gibbs Racing is now, or even headed in that direction, like they suddenly found something or anything like that. I'm proud of Joe Gibbs Racing because they found something, and since it's only them and Furniture Row Racing that are running up front now, they've obviously got something they're not sharing with the other Toyota teams. I mean, it used to be Toyota teams didn't even share anything at all, and then Toyota kind of got them working together, and now they're like, you know, I'll help you a little bit, but I'm not going to help you beat me. That's their attitude. So I don't see. What I do see at Homestead is possibly four Joe Gibbs teams running for the championship. I mean, right now they're that good. And every weekend that they run good and every weekend that they win, it just builds their momentum up and their confidence up that much more and just makes them that much more tougher to beat the next race. I mean, you can pretty much count on they're going to be tough to beat at Richmond.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with just them carrying them that far. I mean, they are just totally confident.
Now, let's fast forward to Homestead real quick. We've discussed this being a possibility before, but I think this year it is really even more of a possibility than the prior couple years we've had this. How bad do you think that it would be for this sport if we ended up with the Final Four of Joe Gibbs Racing? I would use any other team, but I just don't think that there will not be at least one Joe Gibbs Racing in our Final Four. So I got to use Joe Gibbs Racing, especially the way they started off this season, as my example. I think a couple years back, we could have said, you know, or maybe last year going into the chase, maybe, you know, Hendrick Motorsports, if Casey Kane would have been in. But how would this change people's opinions about the chase, or how, more specifically, how much would it hurt the season finale if we did end up with basically a one-team show for the final race of the season?
It's not good at all. It really isn't. Because every time they win, the first thing you start hearing from the NASCAR haters is, you know, NASCAR's helping them out, and they're cheating, they're dominating and everything. And I think that the fact that they've been so dominant might have something to do with the fact that there was a very sparse crowd of people at Bristol at a track where just a few years ago there were waiting lists for both the day and night race just to get tickets for them. And you saw how things are now with the very low attendance for the race yesterday. I think people are starting to get the idea of, well, Joe Gibbs is going to win this weekend, so, you know, why don't I go to a short track or something else instead, watch the basketball or something. And I think that's one of the things that's really detrimental to the sport by them dominating is, like you said, it just kind of turns people off to it. You know, if you feel like you already know who's going to win, you know, it kind of cuts your interest in the watching.
I knew it was something I was going to say, and I lost my train of thoughts. I think it had something to do with Hendrick, and I'm sure it'll come back to me here in a second. I want to take a moment before we jump into talking about these races, kind of acknowledge a couple of names that maybe we wouldn't have expected to see in the top 10. And, you know, I hate giving all the credit to the fact that Chase Elliott jumped in that 24 car in Hendrick Motorsports. Bristol's a kind of a little different beast of nature to me, and I would like to, you know, give a little credit to Chase Elliott outside of, you know, just you'd be able to be in one of the top cars out there, because it is Bristol. Bristol. Trevor Bain and Roush Fenway, to see the Roush Fenway cars starting to slowly but surely seem that they're starting to get back in the right direction. And how about Matt, and I know I'm going to jack up his last name, something or another. Maybe you're going to be able to do this better than me. The performance he had there, finishing sixth with BK Racing, giving them their best finish. And the emotional, post-race interview you gave. I tell you what, it was good to see some other names up there. We might not have seen a different result in the winter, but it was good to see some other names have big finishes. Even Clint Bowyer over there with H. Scott Racing, and see them, get Clint Bowyer up in the top 10, finishing 8. That was also a real good thing for that 15 team.
Yeah, that was the great thing about yesterday, and one of them being Matt DiBenedetto, I think is how you say his name, pulling off the top 10 finish. And it just goes to show people, you don't have to be, tremendous million-dollar outfit like Hendrick or Joe Gibbs to run good. A lower-funded team like BK Racing showed that with a good driver and good preparations, you can run with these guys. You can beat these guys. You just don't give up. And as far as the human interest side of NASCAR goes, Matt's interview at the race, and I posted a video today on my group page, NASCAR and Other Racing, of the celebration his neighbors had for him when he came home from Bristol. I mean, there was, 100 people there honking their horns, yelling, screaming, waving, saying great things about him. I mean, it generated a ton of human interest in NASCAR, and I think that was the sport. That and the fact, like I said, it shows you don't have to be a multi-million-dollar operation to beat these guys. You just got to get everything together.
Most definitely. It's always good to have stories like this and, be able to, have something out of the ordinary happen. Like I said, it gets to be repetitive at times, and we expect to see, the same cars with the Joe Gibbs Racing, the Hendricks, the Penske cars, and to have someone such as BK Racing and Clint Bowyer over there at Scott Racing, it was, a boost, and, all right, we got some other contenders out there, and these are, not the normal contenders, and it gives you kind of something to look forward to next week. Can they back this up? Is this just, they just happen to get lucky and find the right setup for one weekend, or did these drivers and did these, specific teams find something to build off of? And, obviously that's going to be something that we're all going to keep an eye on next week and see if they found something to build off of.
Yeah, I think it's kind of both. An underfunded team can luck into a good run and everything, but I don't really think that was the case with BK Racing. I think that they've just done nose to the grindstone hard work and just kept after it. And the results aren't piling up that quick, but they're showing that they're growing and getting better as the season goes on. And in turn, I think that'll help motivate some of the other lower dollar teams to go, hey, they can run with them. Why can't we? What are we missing? And maybe they'll look at their program and make some changes. But it's always good to have somebody like BK Racing come in and upset the apple cart, so to speak, by sticking their nose in there and getting a great finish like that, and to build on that for the next race. I think it's definitely a plus, and I think it'll help motivate some of the other teams.
Most definitely. Ryan Blaney, another rookie, 11th place finish. Chris Buescher, I liked the 21st finish for him as well. This week over at NASCAR and Other Racing, Steve's had some interesting stuff going on, and it has been amongst some, I'm not going to say controversial posts, but posts that have stirred the pot a little bit. And one of them we're going to promote for the later show, the 110 Nation Sports Show. We got a really big show coming up here at 9 o'clock, and we're going to promote that towards the end. One of the things that kind of got things stirred up. The other one was a post about your 27th place finisher, Danica Patrick, and Johanna Long. That seems to be a never-ending debate over there. In any NASCAR group. And I thought that got to be rather interesting over there in your group as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a clear-cut division there. People either love Johanna Long and feel like she's a lot better than Danica Patrick, or the Danica Patrick fans that think she's not equal to her and that Danica's better. I mean, people are very divided on this subject, but they're also... You know, there's no in the middle. There's no sitting on the fence with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they both arguments have merit and everything, but the way I see it, yeah, Johanna Long can drive and she can win races in the lower division, but there's some underlying reason why she hadn't got a better ride or hadn't got a top ride.
Yeah.
I don't really know what it is, but the people that really know racing are the car owners and crew chiefs. They're around it all the time. They're looking at all the drivers and comparing and everything. And I just feel like if she was really that qualified, somebody, you know, would put her in a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, regardless of whether she's like Danica and can bring a ton of money to the table, but bringing the money will only get you so far. It'll get your foot in the door, but it won't keep you there. You've got to perform to do it. And I don't see what the problem is with Johanna Long, other than some bad choices she's made as far as rides go previously that didn't help her out. But there's got to be something that these car owners and crew chiefs are seeing that are making them shy away from her.
And I
saw comments saying, you know, Richard Childress said, oh, I'd put her in a car if I had the sponsorship money and everything. And at the same time, I'm thinking Richard Childress has got more money than God. I mean, the fact that the sponsorship isn't there for it doesn't really affect him that much, I don't think. I think he could put her in a car without sponsorship if he wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
There's just something there that's missing in her driving program, and you know I hate it for her, but that's life.
Okay. And I agree. I mean, and you know I'm a Johanna fan. I don't have nothing against her, but I agree. Obviously, there's something more to the story, or she would already had a ride. You know, obviously she's just as marketable or could be as marketable as Danica. And I hate that's the first thing everybody wants to throw up. Oh, it's because Danica's look or because of GoDaddy. Do fans not realize every driver is marketable? That's they're there to be sponsored. They are to be marketable. Before Dale really started taking off, the latter part of him being a Hendrick Motorsport and being the most popular driver, all it was marketability, not because he was that good of a driver. Dale Jr., there's no reason that he is the 15-year straight most popular driver. It's only been the last, I don't know, 3 to 5 years that he's really come on and really excelled at driving. Chase Elliott, as marketable as he's been, it's all based off his name. It has nothing to do what he's actually done in the Sprint Cup Series. And we can go through half the drivers on this entry list and put just because they're marketable or just because, such as Paul Menard's case, because there's sponsorship there. So I hate having that whole debate and conversation, oh, she's just in the sport because she looks the way she does or because she's a marketable, you know, marketable tool for a team. That's what every driver there is for. That this is a sponsor-driven sport, and if you're not marketable, you're not going to be in a car. It don't matter how good you are. If nobody's willing to sponsor you and you're not marketable and profitable for them, you're not going to have an opportunity anyway. So you got to be marketable, and I hate that argument.
Yeah, I know. That was a big comment I saw over and over again in that post. You know, people say, well, Danica doesn't win. She can't win. She's only won one IndyCar race, yada, yada, yada. And people don't realize the sponsor is not paying all this money for her to win races.
No.
They're paying the money for the exposure she gets their product. You know, there's a sheet that comes out that's provided to all the teams every Tuesday morning that breaks down how many minutes and seconds their car was shown on TV during the race.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the figure that the sponsors are looking at. It's not so much important that she win. Yeah, you get extra publicity when you win. But think about it. When you crash, they show your car over and over again in replays, slow motion and stuff. They come interview the driver, and she's in her driving suit, shown on TV. I mean, that's what the sponsor's looking for, is how much TV time can they get.
There ain't nobody outside of maybe Kevin Harvick when he won the Daytona 500, and it was a big to-do because Sunoco was not happy because Shell was blasted everywhere on Kevin Harvick's car, fire suit, driver suit, and everything else, and they had to kind of back off that a little bit. Outside of that, ain't nobody pay attention to what car that particular was driving. You know, what sponsor was on the car when they won. It's not like, oh, Danica, she won that race, and she was driving for Nature Baker, whatever she's driving for now.
Yeah.
You know, nobody cares about that. And that's, you know, that's what exactly the sponsors are thinking. It don't matter. You know, yes, it would be nice for you to put the car in victory lane, but, you know, we're about how many times you're going to put our product in front of the millions of people that watch that sport. And if you're a hot commodity, you're somebody that they constantly talk about, Danica, Kyle Busch, Dale Jr., yes, we want to slap the daggone whatever we can on your car because we know that we're going to be talked about, or at least you're going to be talked about, and we're going to get visibility. It's not necessarily about being in victory lane.
Exactly. People don't realize that, yeah, GoDaddy might spend $10 million on a year's sponsorship, but at the end of the year, they couldn't buy $10 million worth of advertising time on television and get the same amount of exposure that they get from sponsoring the car.
Oh, yeah.
They might spend $10 million and get $20 million worth of television time out of the deal. So that, you know, that's where the sponsor's looking. That, and kind of similar to the old win on Sunday, sell on Monday deal, the sponsor's hoping that people will go, well, I like Danica, so, you know, I'll start eating these home bakery items, or I like Joey Logano, so I'm going to start buying Shell gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
I've been like that for the majority of my racing life. I mean, I still drink Folgers coffee simply because I work on a team sponsored by Folgers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would smoke Winston cigarettes when I smoked because they were involved in racing and the fact they gave us free cigarettes every week. But stuff like that, you know, it carried over to me, and I think it carries over to a lot of other fans, too, that they realize just by buying that sponsor's product, they're helping to keep that sponsor in racing. And that's what that's what the sponsor's hoping for, and that's what the teams are hoping for.
And you're exactly right. Outside of the fact that GoDaddy has a very good rate, I think in 5 years we might have been down for 24 or 36 hours because they had some glitch. We have never had a problem with GoDaddy. And so outside, you know, the customer service, which has been great, the original reason I went into it was the fact that GoDaddy was Danica's sponsor. There's other options out there, but because I'm a Danica fan, that's the route I went. So I'm glad I went that route because I have had a great relationship with GoDaddy and their service and everything else. And anytime I call them up, you know, it's A-plus service, and they take care of everything that needs to be taken care of. And, you know, on more than one occasion, you know, I've screwed up and got a product that I didn't want or had a product I didn't realize I was paying for, and, you know, they've refunded me the difference back and everything else. I have no complaints at all out of GoDaddy, but originally that's the direction I went was because that was a sponsor of Danica, and I'm a Danica fan. So, You know, I completely, you know, agree. And, you know, there's been other things in my life as well that, you know, if I was a particular fan of a particular driver or even a particular fan of a particular, you know, athlete out there, it didn't matter what it was. I got a pair of LeBron James. No, I didn't pay for it for anybody. How are you going to pay that money for much money for a pair of shoes? It was a Christmas gift. It was a $160 pair of shoes. But, yes, I did want them. And, you know, it was because I'm a fan of LeBron James. I wanted a pair of LeBron James shoes. So I completely agree. And, you know, I guess that kind of makes, you know, I guess that kind of brings the inner kid out of us in a way, because the only reason we want some of these products is because our favorite person or who we look up to wants them. Yeah. I don't know how many grownups out there that actually say that. I think that's the inner sport kid in us. But I absolutely positively agree with what you said. Bristol. You've had an opportunity to be there. You've had an opportunity to prepare for a weekend there. How different is it to prepare for Bristol versus maybe some of the other smaller tracks? To me, I guess going into it not knowing a lot, I would visualize it's almost like a crapshoot, just like Talladega or Daytona, and it's kind of a wild card because you never know at Bristol, and there's so much beating and banging. But maybe compared to other smaller tracks, How much different is it to prepare versus maybe another half mile or a mile track or maybe a mile track? How much different is it to prepare for that, maybe versus Richmond or Martinsville or something?
The other short tracks just don't carry the speed that they carry at Bristol, and that's a big part of it. Bristol, you know, Bristol races like a strong mile and a half track. There's a lot of speed going on, but combined with the short track factor of theirs, beating and banging and fender to fender racing, you've kind of got to build, you know, a special car for Bristol, a car that can take a beating and still be extremely fast. And there's so much travel in the chassis, doing a lap and everything. Everything that you concentrate on a big track, you really have to concentrate on Bristol because of how much speed they take and how tight the racing is. And things, you know, because of that, things happen real quick, and drivers and crews have very little time to react or make a decision or anything with the lap times as fast as they are. You just have to really polish your game for Bristol and be ready for anything, prepared for anything, and have your car prepared for anything that might happen. You're going to get the speed regardless, really, of where you run on the track and everything. Everybody complains about the groove at Bristol, and, yeah, in my opinion, they screwed it up when they ground down the track and all that before. But there's just so much to it, or it used to be. It's not so much now, but it's just so much to it. You can run the bottom the shorter way around the track and get good, fast corner speeds. But at the same time, you can run that high line and get that giant burst momentum off the corner down the straightaway that makes up for what you lose from not running the low line. So it's a track where you figure out where your car's fast and your driver's comfortable driving, and then you fine-tune for that and try to race that line that you're prepared for.
I tell you what, Bristol, I don't know, I love some Bristol. You know, both times I was there, it just blew me away, the action. And obviously track position is key there, as we've seen our pole sitter be able to lead 276 laps and win the race this weekend. But how important is track position there? Are crew chiefs and drivers willing to do without, to shortcut, to get that track position? Is track position more important, and then maybe taking a few extra seconds out there to get your car set up the way it needs to be set up?
Yeah, track position is big time important at Bristol just because it's so hard to pass. It's so hard to advance. you get down toward the end of the race like yesterday and you get some caution flags and you're scared to pit to get new tires and make adjustments on your car because it's going to put you farther back in the pack where there's more action going on and you've got that many more cars you have to pass to get back where you were. And it's just so difficult to pass with it being such a one-groove track now that, you know, track position is pretty much everything there now. It wasn't like that before, but that's either here or there. The present is, this is the way it is. You really don't have that many opportunities to pass. You're not going to really outrun somebody down a straightaway and gain a position like that. You've got to figure out how to be what you want to be is the last one on the brakes and the first one off the gas through every corner. That's the best way to advance yourself and to gain more positions. And if you, you know, if you miss your mark even just a little bit, as fast and as small as that track is, it can cost you two or three positions in the next couple of laps. And it's just, if you're having a bad day, like Kyle Busch was, if you're having a bad day, it just gets worse and worse if you don't correct yourself and get yourself in a groove where you're consistent and hitting your marks every time. And it's, you know, it's just a tough deal, really. It's tough on everybody. And to me, that's what makes it exciting to me more than anything else is just to see who can have a setback and come back from it and still produce.
What big things, what key points from yesterday's race really stuck out in your mind as you were sitting there watching all the action on yesterday's race?
Well, there wasn't really, a lot of people said there was, you know, a tire epidemic because of some blown right front tires. You know, it's Goodyear's fault. You know, it's Bruton Smith's fault for concreting the track and all this. And if you want to place the blame on somebody, blame the crew chiefs and the engineers. They're the ones that put all this, that put as much camber as they can into the front tires to give them grip and to make the car roll better through the corners. But if you get just a little extreme, you pay the price for it. I forget who it was, but they showed somebody's tire yesterday, somebody's right front tire yesterday after a pit stop, and the inside edge was worn down to the cords. You could see the cords showing all the way around the tire and everything, and people were saying, well, that shows Goodyear didn't build a tire, good tire, and no, it doesn't. When you have localized wear like that, it's a problem with the car. It's not a problem with the tire. If it was a problem with the tire, everybody's tires would be doing it because they all have the same tire, same compound. The deciding factor is how much do you want to push that envelope as far as camber goes to get that full footprint of your tire on the racetrack. And some of them evidently push the envelope too far. Joe Gibbs being one of them. Three of their drivers blew out right front tires and caused them to hit the wall. Carl Edwards didn't. Carl Edwards had the same tires as the rest of the Joe Gibbs team, but Carl Edwards' team had might not have decided to go as extreme with the camber as the others were. So, and that might be a that might be because Hamlin and Kyle Busch are already in the chase, so they can experiment. They can push that envelope harder than Kenseth or Edwards could because they are already in. They have nothing to lose if they blow out a tire. You know, Kyle Busch didn't lose anything really yesterday by crashing out because of blown tires. And, you know, maybe he was experimenting, trying to see something, to see how far they could push that envelope or to see if they could find something that they could use in August when they come back to Bristol. to help one of their other teammates if they're not in the chase. So everybody, you know, all the teams, they don't have a mandate of, well, this is the setup we're all going to run. You know, if you're checking out, you're not required to run the same setup as the other guys in Hendrick Motorsports do. You know, you take their advice and you draw knowledge from what they're doing, but in the end, you make your own decision. And I think that's one of the big things that might have helped Carl Edwards yesterday, is he didn't follow along with the other three teams, and the other three teams had tire failures and they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And, you know, I agree. You know, it's funny how fans don't take that all, you know, that whole thought process into consideration. And, you know, think about the fact that the whole team has the exact same tires, and it's all about the setup and the pressures and everything else that helps dictate the tire wear and the issues they have with tires. You know, they almost just seem like, you know, I don't know, that Carl Edwards just had the luck of the day and he was the only one not to get bad tires or something.
I don't think that. I don't think, you know, that he was lucky. I think they did their research and they made a plan and they committed to it. And they realized in the end that it was more important to have a good top finish out of their car because of what they know and what they can learn to use if they need it in August, as opposed to trying something that might be a little over the line and taking a chance on crashing out and falling lower in the points and maybe not getting in the chase. So I think Carl Edwards' team kind of played it right yesterday and did their own thing, ran their own race, and it paid off for them.
Also over this weekend, and speaking of Joe Gibbs Racing, the Xfinity Series ran as well, and Erik Jones found himself in the victory lane. A great finish, obviously, for Joe Gibbs Racing, but more specifically for Erik Jones, as we've been watching him develop more and more every week. For a young driver such as him and the program that he is in, and now obviously, you know, Erik Jones is either going to be stuck there for a while because we know Kyle Busch, Matt Kenseth, Denny Hamlin, Carl Edwards ain't going anywhere. You kind of built the dream team of NASCAR right there. If he continues to have success, which we expect to, especially being in the Joe Gibbs Racing program, does someone such as Erik Jones hang out until a ride opens up, or do you take an opportunity, a lesser opportunity, somewhere else and possibly never having the career that you know you could have if you wait and be patient and wait your turn to get into a ride? To me, it's kind of almost like comparing Aaron Rodgers of the NFL world. You know, he waited until it was his time to take over the Green Bay Packers versus going somewhere else, maybe a lesser team, and not have the success and not have the Super Bowl ring that Aaron Rodgers has and has had other opportunities to potentially win the Super Bowl. If you would have went somewhere else, when we see someone like this, Erik Jones, and the talent that he has, and we know the capabilities of this young, you know, up-and-coming star, does it benefit him to sit there and wait for an opportunity to open up? Or, you know, say 2 years down the road, you know, he gets an opportunity like Chris Buescher, who took a lesser opportunity, so he was in the Sprint Cup Series. Is it important to drivers? Basically, what I'm wanting to know, in your opinion, especially being around, you know, as much as you have, is it more important for a driver just to get the opportunity to be in a car, or is it more important for a driver to get the opportunity of a lifetime and that's going to set him up for a championship run or at least a successful career?
Well, it's kind of two sides to that story. If you're a driver, people have criticized Jeff Burton and Chris Buescher for taking these lower-level rides and teams that aren't as prominent as other teams are. You know, Buescher left. No, not that. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is, you know, if you're running in a last place car, you're in the garage area every week. You're seen by all the other teams, including the crew chiefs and the car owners. They're analyzing how you're doing, and they're smart enough to disconnect the fact that you're in a low-budget team and not a superior car, and to be able to judge your driving ability and your attitude and things like that you have to be a driver in addition just to be able to mash the gas. But you want to be in the garage every week. You want to be at the track every week. You want to get seen by these people. So that's motivation enough to take that low-dollar ride. You know, you don't look at it like, well, I can't win in this car. Well, no, you might not, but you'll be noted anyway by the people that matter, the people that are hiring, and it might help you later on down the road. But on the other hand, yeah, you can sit and wait for a good seat to open up, and this is going to be a problem for JGR. God, well, that's all we're talking about is JGR. But it's going to be a problem for them because they've got Eric Jones. They've got Daniel Suarez waiting in the wings. They've got capable drivers that are capable of driving in Cup now, but they don't have the vacant seats because of the contracts and everything that the other four drivers already have. So there, what do you do? I mean, you know, do you wait for that seat to open up, or do you jump on something else and try to prove yourself, but at the same time taking the chance of falling on your face and not doing good and hurting your credibility then? I really don't know how JGR is going to handle that. You know, how can they can't keep Eric Jones in a Xfinity Series car forever. You know, they're going to have to move him up the Cup somehow. So what are they going to do? Are they going to replace one of the other drivers? Or I don't think they would want to so much farm him out.
Yeah.
The Furniture Row or anybody else that they're affiliated with, because they might lose him.
I wonder how that would work. If it got to a point that, look, we need to put Eric Jones in a car, if we flip the money, Furniture Row, will you open up a second car program? I mean, as much money as Joe Gibbs Racing has and as successful as they are, would that ever be a discussion that you could see that happening? Look, you start a second car program, which we already know that's already kind of been in the talks, not so much Joe Gibbs Racing, but Furniture Row possibly going to a second car. But if with this new affiliation with Furniture Row and Joe Gibbs Racing, would this be an option for a second or even a third car that Joe Gibbs Racing financially would be highly invested so that they could open up an opportunity for such someone like Eric Jones or Daniel Suarez?
The thing that it brings to my mind is the situation of Clint Bowyer. Bowyer knows he's going to Stewart Haas next year, and Stewart Haas, in a way to keep Bowyer there within their organization, has put him in an affiliated team drive. It hadn't worked out good at all for Bowyer, to say the least, but what do you do? I mean, you know, you can't, when you've got a hot prospect like Eric Jones, you can't risk losing him to somebody else because you know he's going to win races and you know he's probably going to win championships. So you can't turn your back on that. You've got to do something to protect your interest and to keep him in your fold. But, you know, how do you do it? The only thing I could think of really would be for J.D. Gibbs, who I don't think is medically able to do this, but it would be for like J.D. Gibbs to sell his interest in Joe Gibbs Racing and then start his own race team. And then you kind of got around the rule limiting you to four drivers. You know, with that big of an alliance with Joe Gibbs Racing and all the technical information and everything they would share, they could get around that problem and create another team for Eric Jones. But, you know,
I just didn't know if Joe Gibbs Racing could be financially invested or somehow be a partner or something into Furniture Row where they help them form their second team or a third team potentially, and they be able to have, you know, an agreement that, look, you know, we, you know, this is your team, but, you know, this is our driver. We kind of reap the benefits from the purse money, you know, kind of split it or however, you know, they would work it. So it's not so much like Clint Bowyer where he just kind of hanging out for a year, that Daniel Suave or possibly Eric Jones would be permanently part of Furniture Row, but because of their affiliation, that basically they're still part of Joe Gibbs Racing and you know, be able to write up some kind of, you know, agreements, you know, on how that would work. I just didn't know if that was a possibility versus having to open a whole new team or, you know, kind of have them in limbo like Clint Bowyer.
Well, you know, the risk you would run from that is you send Eric Jones to Furniture Row Racing to help get him started and to help keep him in the fold, and he decides halfway through the season, I don't like racing out of Colorado. I want to be in North Carolina and Charlotte where everything's happening. I don't want to be isolated out here.
Mm-hmm.
He starts thinking that, then somebody like Roush or Hendrick or somebody, you know, flashes a little money at him to make it worthwhile, and suddenly he's gone. You know, there's a lot of factors involved in trying to work that problem out, and I'm going to keep an eye on it. I want to see how they do it because I think this is going to turn into a problem for Joe Gibbs Racing here shortly.
Most definitely, and you know, I know all teams would love to have that problem, and you know, unfortunately, yeah. Joe Gibbs Racing, they have that problem. And now it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it. I guess the next closest thing to me would be maybe Brandon Jones, and he could, you know, starts having a successful season as fourth or fifth place finishes last week in the RCR car. You know, with them already being tied up with the sponsorship with Menard, and obviously he's not going to go nowhere because that's just a guaranteed ride right there that you're going to have entered into the field basically for free. And then both the Dillon boys. Whether or not you're going to open up in a fourth car, if Brandon Jones, you know, proves to be, you know, a successful driver, or, you know, if they want to stay a three-car team and what they're going to do as well. But we were talking about, you know, the good and the bad with either staying with the team or, you know, taking that leap and bound. To me, two prime examples would be Justin Allgaier and Chris Buescher. Buescher making the best of his opportunity is proving, even on a lower-funded team, yes, he's not getting the results I'm sure that he is wanting, but he's got decent results. I think a 21st place, I think we discussed a little bit ago, and is staying out of trouble and is getting valuable seat time and is proving that he can be out there. Now, if he had the right material and the right equipment, that he probably would be a successful driver and is getting that opportunity. And even though maybe the results ain't necessarily showing it, he's making the most of that opportunity versus Justin Allgaier, who jumped into the opportunity that he got, and hell, they didn't even let him even attempt for one of the All-Star races because he was wrecking too many cars, and ultimately that's, you know, ended up sending him back to the Xfinity Series because he was not a valuable asset to any team. And so I think, in my opinion, I could be wrong, but in my opinion, I think that's kind of two good examples of, you know, the good and bad of, you know, either, you know, you're not waiting and you're taking an opportunity, one, you know, making the most of it, in my opinion, with Chris Buescher and Justin Allgaier, trying to make the best of it, and it just didn't work out.
No, it really hadn't, and, you know, it's back to what I said before. You look at the stats, you look at the stat sheets, and you go, well, he only finished 21st, and he hasn't had any top five finishes or all that. that doesn't shine your bubble. But at the same time, to the people that know and the people that matter, the people that are hiring the drivers and the crew chiefs, you're being evaluated by them, and they can easily deduct the fact of the equipment that you're racing in is not top-notch.
Oh, yeah.
And they can see through that and see just what kind of driver and what kind of person you are, and they know with their equipment they could build you into something better. So it's a delicate line, and sometimes it works. And like you said with Allgaier and Boyer, sometimes it doesn't work. You just, you know, suck it up, Buttercup. That's racing. Do the best you can with it and just come back next week.
And honestly, I think if people took the time and kind of looked back and kind of got, you know, either, you know, compare Chris Buescher to the other drivers on the team, or, you know, prior finishes and the trends that, you know, the team he is on has performed at certain tracks, and compare that to where he is finishing, you probably would end up being surprised at maybe how good Chris Buescher is actually doing in the equipment that he is in.
Yeah.
I think a lot of fans don't take that, you know, take that time. All they look is, okay, well, Chase Elliott finished fourth, and Ryan Blaney finished 11th, and Chris Buescher, well, yeah, he finished somewhere back in the back. He finished 20-something. Yeah, but, you know, we expect the 24 car. You look at the trends of the 24 and the Hendrick Motorsports, fourth is to be expected. You're in the best, basically the best product you could get in. Outside of Joe Gibbs Racing, Hendrick and Stuart Haas, to me, well, you got to throw Penske in there. You got a three-way tie for your second-best team out there, and those three teams, to me, are really close. And same with Ryan Blaney. You're an extension of Penske, which is, to me, tied to the second-best team out there. Then you got Chris Buescher that is on a team that nobody even talks about. And unless it's somebody out there just getting a random interview, they don't talk to nobody, you know, down to that far back in the pit stall or, you know, in the garage area or anything else. So, I mean, I just think fans, they sit there and take maybe a moment to kind of do their research and homework and take all these, you know, different things into consideration before you start judging on, you know, what rookie is better. You know, we've had this conversation before that, you know, I feel that they're finishing the way they finish should not necessarily dictate who is rookie of the year. I wish that there was a broader, you know, a better way to dictate who your rookie of the year is, because what Chris Buescher is accomplishing with the team he is might make him a much better driver and a more suitable rookie of the year than maybe Chase Elliott. And just because Chase Elliott finished up front more often doesn't mean that, you know, he's, in my opinion, deserving of a rookie of the year necessarily if he was to win it.
Yeah, it'd be nice if instead of the rookie of the year just being based on your finishing order and the number of races, figure out some way to pick Chase Elliott and Chris Buescher and swap their cars, you know. Mm-hmm. Put Chris Buescher in that 24 car. You know, will he be able to run as good as Chase Elliott has? And put Chase Elliott in Buescher's car. Will he be able to do what Buescher can do with that team? It's kind of like the rookie of the year deal is kind of like saying who's the greatest of all time. Well, you can't compare Richard Petty winning races in the 60s and Jeff Gordon winning races in the 90s and 2000s. I mean, yeah, they're both apples, but you're comparing apples and oranges. I'm like you. I wish there was some other way to determine it than just based on your finishing positions. Maybe have it voted on by the crew chiefs or the other drivers or the car owners.
Or maybe have some board. I mean, you know, just, you know, unbiased. It has nothing to do with none of the teams, no affiliation. Some kind of board put together or something. Or even, you know, have a fan vote involved. Well, that won't even work, because I think Chase Elliott, just because he's in the 24 car and Bill Elliott's son, would probably win that. So, you know, that kind of reflects. We can say the same thing with the most popular driver, and that's a prime example because, you know, up until the last, I don't know, 3 to 5 years where Dale Jr. has really taken off and has really been a serious threat to be a championship contending driver, there was no reason that he was the most popular driver for all these years because he didn't really accomplish nothing. Now, I don't want to take anything away from the latter part of his career because he's really came into his own and has really, really stepped into, you know, kind of gotten out of that shadow and that coattail and has become his own man and has really done great, not only on the track, but with Junior Nation, you know, Junior Motorsports and everything else. But, you know, before then, the most popular driver, I'm sorry, but I always had an issue with him being the most popular driver and really not doing nothing. I was never a fan of that whole concept. So I guess the fan vote for Rookie of the Year, that wouldn't help any because we'd probably end up with the same issue as well on that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, if his name was Dale Jones Jr., would he be the most popular driver for all these years?
No.
I don't think so. I think the majority of it has to do with the fact that he's Dale Sr.'s son.
It is funny because, honestly, most races over the last couple of years, most talk over the last couple of years, outside of probably the 4 or 5 months that Kyle Busch was out sideline injured, and he still might have been the most popular, as in talked about driver in NASCAR, and yet because it's a fan vote, he doesn't get it. And you can hate Kyle Busch all you want. Popularity to me doesn't mean you necessarily are the most liked driver. It is the most popular driver. And so, therefore, to me, that is the driver that gets talked about the most, that gets the most TV time and everything else. And I'm sorry, I don't think at this point, over at least the last season to season and a half, there's been a driver talked about more than Kyle Busch. And yet, I'm sure that he was not even anywhere close to being the most popular driver last year.
No, he wasn't, but, I mean, how much do you draw, actually, from being the most popular driver? Other than T-shirt sales, how does that help your career, especially if you're a multiple winner? Yeah, you're a great guy, and you've got a great personality and everything, but I would rather impress the people that really matter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying the fans don't matter, but the fans don't sign any paychecks. The fans don't hire and fire drivers. I mean, the people you want to be the most popular with are the people that sign your checks.
Which I think Kyle Busch has done a very good job at that. Even on the fan side, we're getting less and less boos and more cheers, but even his attitude week in and week out has changed so dramatically that it is, you know, I think once upon a time, if I'm not mistaken, there was a threat of one of his sponsors pulling out because of his attitude and what he did. It might have been around that time where he put Hornaday into the wall in the truck race or whatever happened out the incident. I think around that time. And to go from that to where he's at now, and I think every sponsor would love to have an opportunity to be on that 18 Toyota or the 51 or 54, whatever he drives in the truck now, any of the vehicles he's on. And you know, that's a prime example. He went from not being popular at all to the people that matter to now he's by far the most popular, and it don't matter what aspect of the sport. The people that matter, that's where he's at and where he's popular at.
Yeah, a team owner would look at it like, all things considered, I can send Kyle Busch to charm school and teach him to be a nicer person, a better interview, not so emotional when he falls out of a race and everything. But you can't send him to school to teach him to be a race car driver.
Yeah.
They can show him how to be a race car driver, but being a winning race car driver comes from more inside yourself than anything else. It's the actual person that makes that person become a successful driver. I mean, you can turn somebody personality-wise into anything you want to with enough schooling and training and everything, but you just can't buy or install that killer instinct, that wanting to win feeling that the successful drivers have. The ego that these drivers have. The top drivers, there's not a single one of them that straps in that car on Sunday and doesn't 100% believe I'm better than the rest of these SOBs out here and I'm going to wax their ass today. I'm that good. That's the kind of attitude that makes you a winning race car driver. I never went to the racetrack when I had my late model team hoping that I would do good. I never hoped. I always felt like I was completely capable of winning any race I went into, and that's what I hoped to accomplish. I didn't, you know, if I didn't win, it was unexpected to me.
Mm-hmm.
I just never went into it hoping something would go my way.
As we get things wrapped up, it's hard to believe an hour's already gone by. Is
I know.
Any other topics that we didn't touch on that you was wanting to jump into tonight?
Well, I wish I could come up with something that didn't involve Joe Gibbs Racing, but right now it's going to be hard to do. The biggest thing I wanted to talk about is what we're going to talk about in an hour on the 110 Nation show, the deal with Kyle Busch hitting a fan during the race yesterday when he came off the track, and the controversy that has created. I have had so many comments from people about this, and they're pretty evenly divided between the fan was in the wrong because she wasn't paying attention or should have known better, yada, yada, yada. And the other half are Kyle Busch is just that way. That's just the way he is. He's an ass, and he'll run over somebody. So it's going to be interesting to talk about that next hour. I hope people will call in and voice their comments because I want to know, you know, what everybody thinks about this and whose side is ahead, so to speak.
Well, most definitely, and ironically enough, it involves another Joe Gibbs Racing topic there with Kyle Busch. But for those that are tuned in, make sure you guys check us out. I'm sorry, at 9 o'clock here over on the 110 Nation Sports Show, we are going to have the young lady that essentially got ran over or got ran into, however you want to word it. She and her husband are going to be joining the show about 9:15, as well as Steve will be joining us as well. We're very, very excited about having them on the show. It has been a hot topic in the NASCAR scene today, and fortunately for us, Steve was able to pull some strings and have them join us tonight over on the 110 Nation Sports Show at 9:15. Make sure you guys also hang around. We got Amber Balkin, the driver from Canada, who's been making her ways up through the ranks. She's getting an opportunity, making the most of it. We've had her on the 110 Nation Sports Show probably 4 or 5 times now. We also she also visited Racing with Big Sweat, Steve's show on Thursday night a few weeks back. It might have been a little bit longer now, maybe a month at this point. I can't remember exactly how far back. But she's visited multiple shows here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. We have her joining us at 10 o'clock as well. Looking forward to having her back on the show as well. Don't forget, Thursday nights, well, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to let Steve do this. Thursday nights and your Facebook group. Let them know about that, Steve.
Yeah, definitely. But you really should tune in and listen and maybe even call in and comment and talk with Amber. She's come down from Canada to North Carolina, and she made her late model debut this past weekend, and we'll let her tell you about how that went and everything. But she is a very capable driver, and she's another one that is going to go places, and sadly she's going to be put in the same position as Johanna Long. You know, because Amber is a good-looking woman, too, and she's very marketable because of that and everything. So she's going to have to face that uphill battle that Danica's having to face now. You know, so I'm going to be interested in hearing what she has to say about that. Thursday night on Racing with Big Sweat, my show dedicated to the local short track racer. I'm still trying to finalize everything, but there's a bit of a brouhaha that blew up this past weekend between one of the local dirt tracks and one of their most popular drivers, and we're trying to get both of them lined up to come on and talk about it and air their views and try to settle this dispute and everything. So check us out Thursday night, 9 o'clock, on the 110 Nation Radio Network. It'll definitely be a show you want to see, I promise you. I wouldn't lie to you. Trust me. And check out my Facebook group, NASCAR and Other Racing. We had a large number of comments from yesterday on our race thread about what was happening and everything. I had over 1,000 comments from a lot of different members that were on the thread and expressing their feelings about everything that was going on. So check that out. Come join us when you can. And I promise you it'll be worth your while. I wouldn't lead you astray. And tomorrow I'll have my blog up, NASCAR Shit, Racing with Big Sweat. And trust me, I'm going to be talking more about a lot of the things that happened at Bristol in a more unfiltered way. You know, I don't bite my tongue for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never hear me say, I didn't mean to say that. You damn right I meant to say it, and I'll own it if I said it. I'm not backing down. So if you want an honest opinion or an honest answer or something, send a comment to NASCAR Shit, Racing with Big Sweat, and I promise you, I'll tell you like it is, the way I feel.
Make sure you guys also check out the 110 Nation Sports Show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, 9 p.m. You can also check out the Happy Hour Garage at noon on Saturdays and the Dirt Talk Hour. We had a great show. We had a very informative show last night, and any of those people out there that are part of the dirt track world, you know that Charlie, and I apologize, I don't know his last name, had an unfortunate incident over the weekend that involved 80% of his body being burned up. We had probably about 5 drivers and an EMS personnel come on last night's show and talk about a lot of different things to help continue making this sport safer. So make sure you guys check that episode out last night. And also check them out on Sunday nights as well. Check out our Facebook. Check out our like us on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Don't forget at 9 o'clock tonight. And if you don't believe me that it's going to be a packed show, you can ask Steve as well. My computer and my phone has not stopped dinging and going off since we post to the different groups that we post to. I don't think my phone has even had an opportunity. It's been on the charger for the last 2 hours, and it has nonstop gone off to the point I don't think it's even hardly charged at all. So make sure you guys tune in tonight. Tonight should be a really good show to tune into tonight and get a little something out of it and have an opportunity to maybe learn a little something. And, I don't know what else to say about it. I know I'm going to be there, so...
Yeah, I think if you tune in, you'll learn something because it's definitely going to bring up the things you need to know about being down in the pits and mm-hmm. being in the garage area on a race weekend. And it's not just roaming around looking and getting autographs. There's a lot more stuff you have to do to protect yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And the sponsor of my Thursday night show, Snafu Seasoning, has sent me a ton of product to give away, so call in tonight and give us a comment on what you think about what we're going to talk about on the 110 Nation Sports Show, and PM me your address, and I'll send you some Snafu seasoning to try out. So call in, comment. I really, really, truly want to know what other people's opinions are about this incident that happened over the weekend at Bristol.
Most definitely. I'm looking forward to it. Next week, we'll be back at it right here at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to get you guys caught up on next weekend's action, and maybe we'll get lucky. And it will not be a Joe Gibbs Racing sweep of a weekend once again. Like I said, it's not a Joe Gibbs Racing. I like Joe Gibbs Racing. There's not probably a single driver on there that I wouldn't cheer for. Just repetitiveness. I need variety. I just do. I don't care if it's my favorite driver. I do not still want to see them. I've jumped ship on a couple drivers because I got tired of watching them win all the time. I just want to see variety. I'm sorry. How I am. But make sure you guys tune right back in here next Monday night, 7 p.m. Steve and myself will be right back at it here doing it again. Until next Monday night, you guys have a great night.
Yeah, y'all tune in at 9 o'clock to the 110 Nation Sports Show. I'm going to pop a top on a couple of beers and get ready for that. So talk to you then.
You guys have a good night.
All right.